There's no place I'd rather be than in a pulpit in this church on a Sunday morning. I mean that with all sincerity. God bless the worship band. You guys did great. God bless the congregation. You guys did great. Having preached in so many churches, having grown up a preacher's kid, son of a preacher's kid, son of a preacher's kid, son of a preacher's kid, I have spent enough time in churches where the people worship like a sack of dry bones to really appreciate it when I can stand in a church and hear the voices of my friends in the congregation bouncing off the rafters. Make sure you don't take it for granted. There are many churches that lack the kind of fervor that you have shown this morning. So God bless you in that. In case inquiring minds want to know, yes, I did dream about today's sermon. And yes, I did show up to the pulpit in shorts and a t-shirt. We got through that, though, and I started preaching. And then we were attacked by aliens who transported us to an alternate universe where the battle waged into the wee hours of the morning. So regardless of how good the first 5 minutes are, if E.T. shows up, run. Lord, this is all about you. We are your people, the sheep of your pasture. This Bible is something that you have given to instruct us, to encourage us, to speak to us. We just ask now that we would get out of the way, that you would shine through this, that Holy Spirit, you would speak to our hearts, that you would make this time worthwhile. And God's people said, amen. So my wife has told me to speak slowly. Apparently, last time I was so paranoid about making 26 minutes that I preached so fast in the first 6 minutes that she doesn't know what I said. So I will do my best to slow things down. This is Tell That to Your Troubles. Here's a question for you. Will troubles never cease? You could say it like you were exasperated, like, will troubles never cease? You sometimes feel like life is up and down forever. And if you're an adult, what do you know about seesaws? They make you sick, right? Up and down and up and down. Sometimes these ups and downs are minor. Sometimes it's things like family. Your family is driving you crazy. Sometimes it's not your family. Like yesterday, we were doing chores all day. And it just makes me kind of depressed. It's not a big deal, but, the seesaw was down for Todd yesterday. Sometimes it's your job, right? Maybe you have a nasty boss. Maybe your coworker's in a bad mood. Maybe you're self-employed like me, and things are looking a little more insecure than you'd like them to look. God knows. Maybe it's the rat race. Maybe you commute to Toronto every single day. And, halfway through the year, you're just feeling like enough already. For me this week, I almost reached breaking point because of breakfast. School is almost done, thank God. It's the last week of school. We love summer at my house. And I'm just so glad I'm not going to have to do preschool breakfast. Do you know what I'm talking about? Where it's like every single day, I want to sing like from Beauty and the Beast, every morning just the same, since the morning that we came to this poor provincial town, good morning, Belle. And then we break into it. Sarah comes out. We love musicals at my house. And we sing and we dance and I get over my depression. It's really hilarious. In fact, they know that this happens at the start of the school year when I start cooking breakfast. Little Zoe, who is still very honest because she's only eight, she sat down this year, first week of school, and Daddy arranges breakfast. And this is what she said, no joke. Great. Back to this again. Cereal and oranges. Cereal and apples. Cereal and grapes. So I was feeling a little depressed, as were my offspring, because of preschool breakfast. Now, sometimes it's something major, like a friend of mine who, okay, get this. I mean, you may think that your life is bad. Check out his last 2 years. In the last 2 years, he has lost his mom suddenly to cancer. Then he lost his job, high-paying corporate guy. Then he lost his dad suddenly to cancer. And now he's in the middle of losing his marriage. It's a very bad 2 years. We were sitting at his house this week, and he just invited us over for dinner, and we stayed for dinner, and we're having a drink in the backyard, and we're just talking. He's not a guy who really expresses his feelings, and so we were talking about his journey a little bit, and he was initiating it, because I can't initiate. He's just not that guy. And so it was cool that he started talking to me about this, and I said to him a line that I've said to a few friends over the years. I said, well, at least you don't have shingles. Right? You ever had shingles? He's a good enough friend that I could say this to him. I had shingles once, and I had it like my life was falling apart. The company was on the verge of, it was terrible. Everything that could go wrong was going wrong. And then to add insult to injury, I developed shingles. Usually it's because your immune system is so depressed. It comes back if you had measles, or is it chickenpox? Chickenpox when you were a kid. As an adult, it can show up, and it is no fun. So I said to him, well, at least you don't have shingles. And I was kind of half joking and half looking for a laugh. And he smiled wryly and laughed. And, you know, we kind of understood both the joke and the meaning beneath it. Now, last time I preached, I gave you a very practical sermon, 7 tips to surviving tough times. Today is more of a mindset exhortation. Why? Well, because we're all going to have troubles. All of us are going to have troubles, and so all of us are going to find ourselves in a situation where we need to make some kind of response to our troubles. So this is what to tell your troubles. Noah wonderfully read Psalm 77. What a dude. Here's verses 10 to 5. It's up on screen for you. We'll just have one slide all day. Then I said, I will appeal to this, to the years of the right hand of the Most High. I will remember the deeds of the Lord. Yes, I will remember your wonders of old. I will ponder all your work and meditate on your mighty deeds. Your way, O God, is holy. What God is great like our God? You are the God who works wonders. You have made known your might among the peoples. You, with your right arm, redeemed your people, the children of Jacob and Joseph. Selah. First things first, then I said. Now what precedes the opening of this passage? Then I said. A whole heap of trouble. Were you thinking as Noah was reading, like, this is a very depressing psalm? Why are we preaching from this psalm today? Just so you know, the way I prefer to preach is out of my devotional life, so this series works nicely. RD calls me and says, yo, you want to preach? I say, sure. He says, what do you want to preach from? I look at what I read that morning. I say, how about Psalm 77? He says to me, well, no one will accuse you of cherry-picking one of the best, easiest ones to preach. Right? Who's ever read Psalm 77? It's like a throwaway, and it's very depressing. That's what precedes, then I said, okay? That then is a transitional word. Then I said, in light of everything that's just happened, and everything that's just happened is everything that leads to shingles. Okay, Asaph, who was David's musical director, he's having a very difficult time. You just have to understand that this is part of the language of the Psalms. Many of these songs were written in times of deep trouble. They're written as a response to try and make sense of what they're dealing with. And so if you feel like it's a recurring theme, it's because we're preaching out of the Psalms, and it's kind of a recurring theme. Asaph is dealing with trouble so intense that he feels abandoned by God. This is how he's outlined it in the previous verse 7 and 8. He feels like God has abandoned him. Here's the first point. If it can happen to Asaph, a guy who makes the Bible, it can happen to you. Now, this is profoundly difficult, right, when we feel abandoned by God. Now, I don't want to bandy this word about casually. I really mean it, like truly abandoned by God. It probably won't happen to you that many times in life, but it'll probably happen to you maybe once, twice, I don't know. If it's a really tough go, 3 times. Have you ever felt that way? Like God has abandoned me. I've only felt that way once, but truly. And the wreckage of that, I mean, took me on a 2-year trip to the darkness and back. So what do you do when that happens? You say something. Then I said. You say something. Okay, this is a universal truth. When trouble hits, everybody starts preaching. Everybody. You've heard this before. Well, it's all your fault. They're preaching. They're preaching a sermon where you are the evil one. It's all your fault. And then you preach back. It's not my fault. Right, so now they're preaching at you and you're preaching at them. And then if you want to find peace, you say, wait a minute, it's all her fault. Right? Don't pretend that you're not saying something about your situation. It's hard for us as Christians, right? Because we tend to be posers if we let ourselves go. You want to put on a good show, feel like everything's okay. All right, don't pretend you're not saying something about your situation. Sometimes you're just saying it in your own heart. And this is also very important. I was somewhat troubled by this week. We were at a service, and I don't want to slag it, but there was an undertone of it's okay for the priest to be your intermediary. And I'm enough of a Protestant that when I sit there, I start freaking out. Right? I'm like, I want to jump up and say, you don't need him to be your go-between. Right? That's what Jesus did last time I checked my Bible. Okay, don't fool yourself into thinking that someone else can respond for you. A favorite Bible teacher, a favorite saint in your church. No, you need to say something. You're not going to be able to piggyback on someone else's response. Okay? You respond for you. So the next question is, what will your response be? This is great. Then I said, I will appeal to this. I will appeal to this. He's got something in mind. He's got to go to. He has somewhere he can go. I will appeal to this. Everybody responds to trouble somehow. It's the simple truth that everyone you know is holding on to something in order to make it through. Back when I was in high school, my friends used to accuse me of just having a crutch. This is a term that was popular back when I was a teenager. Oh, Todd, Christianity is just a crutch. And I had been raised by a preacher, so I had been trained to reply with, well, yeah, it's a pretty good one. How's yours working out for you? As if they're self-actualized, as if they've got the world by the tail. And I'm the only one who needs help. Everybody's holding on to something to make it through. Look for it, okay, in your personal relationships. You need to watch for this, because there will come a time when they come to you in a time of trouble, and they will say to you, you know, and they'll name it, they'll name their crutch, it's just not working for me anymore. And you can say, yeah, I know, I tried that too, and I have found that Jesus is the only answer. And if you're their friend, and if you have a relationship with them, and if you've built trust over the course of years, that's not going to freak them out. Everybody is holding on to something to make it through. The only question is, what? You know what you, as a Christian, tell your troubles? God's come through before. He'll come through again. Okay, receive it. I will appeal to this, to the years of the right hand of the Most High. Every time you hear right hand, you need to think bicep, not mine, because it's not that impressive. Think of the most impressive biceps you know, and think of those biceps on God. And think of those biceps deployed in helping you. Okay, I will appeal to the years of the right hand of the Most High. The word for Most High here in Hebrew is El Elyon, like the biggest of big, the God of gods, the master maker, the one. So we appeal to the good old days. We appeal to our history. We look back for signs of past faithfulness, like my Instagram feed. Bless the Lord. I was sitting at my devotion spot this week. I go every morning down to LaSalle Park. That's where I do my devotions after I drop Jordan off for school on my way into my office. And I was flipping through some of my Instagram feed. And I was feeling a little stressful. It was a bit of a difficult week for me. And as I, you know, scrolled through these pictures that by now go back several years, I could see all these times when I'd had a hard time and God came through. Like I saw a picture of me sitting on the dock in Muskoka at our friend's cottage last year when I was dealing with Rogers, who was chasing me for a $680 unjust bill that I couldn't pay. And a year later, I mean, I paid the bill. We're still here. We still have the house. Kids are still eating. God's still on his throne. Amen. This is going to be all right. Right? We've made it through this far. I guess all is not lost. Look at verses 11 and 12. I will remember the deeds of the Lord. Yes, I will remember your wonders of old. I will ponder all your work and meditate on your mighty deeds. There's something wonderful happening here. We're zeroing in on the one thing that I always try to find in a sermon. Here we have a reminder that God's faithfulness, get this, is found in the natural and in the supernatural. Okay, receive it. His faithfulness is found in the natural and in the supernatural. Verse 11, I will remember the deeds of the Lord, the things he does. Yes, I remember your wonders of old, the amazing, the supernatural, the fantastic things that he does. I'll remember the things you did, and I will remember the wonders you've worked. In the Hebrew, there's a very straightforward connection between deeds and wonders. It's as if Asaph is saying here simply, I will remember the amazing things that you have done. Now, naturally, this begs the question, have you ever seen God do something amazing? Like really amazing. I've seen a few really amazing things in my life. I mean, you could count them probably on two hands. Okay, I'm not talking cheap, you know, weird crowd event spirituality here. All of us have experienced that too. I don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater, though. I want to refer you back to those times when you have seen God truly do something amazing. If you have, that's what you tell your troubles. You tell your troubles the story of that amazing event. Right? It's easy to forget unless you have an Instagram feed. Right? So make a point to remember the amazing things that God has done. And yes, I'm here for you. If you're a normal person like me, this also begs the follow-up question, Todd, but what if I've never seen God do something amazing? Right? Thank God for that. You know how many preachers I've sat under who would never make that second point? They just want to sell you on big-time spirituality, right? They're trying to make you into spiritual giants. No, well, yes, but not just that. Right? We're also here for the normal people, which is me. I'm a normal person. Well, what if I've never seen God do something amazing? Like what? I mean, I don't know. Here's where the text gets amazing. Because you too, my normal Christian friend, who's always feeling borderline inferior because you don't seem to experience the authentically supernatural all that often. If I was a little more bored, I would ask for a witness, but don't do it. But you know who you are. You're like, you also, normal Christian, have something to tell your troubles. Verse 12. I will ponder all your work. There it is. That's the big one. I will ponder all your work and meditate on your mighty deeds. The word ponder here is the same word soliloquized from last sermon, which is what? To preach to yourself. So I will preach to myself about all your work, key on that, and meditate, simple, pray, think on, your mighty deeds. If you look up the word work in the Hebrew, I just read it in the Hebrew because I do my first pass in the original Hebrew. It says this, I will preach to myself about all the general labor you do in my life. Right? Rick Carpenter just received it. You got the whole sermon right there. I could quit now. I will ponder all your work. What's the word? Po'alecha. Po'alecha. There's two main banks in Israel where I grew up. The biggest bank is Bank Leumi. Leumi is national. National bank. Bank Leumi. The second biggest bank in Israel is Bank HaPoalim. Did you hear the root word in there? Po'alecha. Po'alim. Bank HaPoalim. And what does Po'alim mean? It means the workers' bank. It means the blue-collar bank. It means the bank for the average, everyday person. The word for work that is used here evokes the image of God as a working man. Feel it, a roofer, an electrician, a sanitation engineer, also known as a garbage man, a school teacher, a barber. Someone who's just doing their job day by day. If that's not the most encouraging thing you've heard all month, I don't know what is. God's just doing work in your life. If this was a black church, they'd be like, oh, running around right now. He's doing work. Get out. He's doing work in your life. God's just doing work. You know? It's no big deal. It's no cause for trumpets and shouting. Calm down, Todd. He's just doing work. This is great because my friend who's one shingles diagnosis away from complete life collapse can't really relate to the miraculous or to mountaintop spiritual experiences right now. Right? He's just gutting it out. He's just trying to get through today. God is with him. God is with you. He banks at Bank HaPoalim, the workers' bank. I love it. See, the problem is if we as Christians are so focused on seeking exclusively supernatural answers to the everyday troubles of life, there's a very good chance we'll miss or alienate my friend, and there's a very good chance that you have been alienated by this kind of practice. So I don't hate the guy, I'm just using him because it's a good memorable reference. Stop telling your troubles to go see Benny Hinn and tell him they need a sandwich. Just tell your troubles they need a sandwich. And while you're eating your ham and cheese, finish our text and refresh your perspective. Finishing with verses 13 to 15. Your way, O God, is holy. What God is great like our God? You are the God who works wonders. You have made known your might among the peoples. You, with your arm, redeemed your people, the children of Jacob and Joseph. Selah! Now, I could preach a whole second half of the sermon on this. Usually, I would preach as long on these three verses as I did on the first three, but I'm not going to this morning. So simply put, in short form, refreshing our perspective, verse 13. Everything God does is right. Your way is holy. Okay, try that one on for size. That's like a bite of the sandwich. Everything God does is right. You struggle with that? Like, am I the only one? I do. Okay, receive it by faith. Everything God does is right. He's also the biggest. What God is great like our God? Literally in the Hebrew, this is na, 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 na. Our God is bigger than your God. Like, it's literally that simple, the language. He's the biggest, and he's the one doing work on your behalf. He's a wonder worker who's announcing his might, not his niceness, to the world. Verse 14, you are the God who works wonders. You have made known your might among the peoples. Man, I'd love to preach about that. This is a bias of mine that is biblical. Huh. God is not announcing his niceness to the world. He is announcing his might to the peoples. I love it. It's right there in the Bible. Does it say he's announcing his niceness to the people? No, he's announcing his might to the people. R.D. started coaching football with me this week at Hayden. Who are the two most aggressive coaches on the field? Yours truly and that guy. And it's a beautiful thing. And the second they find out we're both preachers, they're like, what? That's how you do the work of evangelism day by day. You don't serve a nice God. You serve the mighty God of the universe who's announcing his might to the peoples. So I'm like, oh, excuse me, next time you have a second, if you could just consider me as a viable option. No. He's announcing his might to the nations. He's saved us himself in a hands-on way. Not because we're awesome, but because we're his. Verse 15, you with your arm. You with your arm. That big right arm referenced off the top. You with your arm redeemed your people, the children of Jacob and Joseph. Selah. He saved us himself, all by himself, on his own, with his big, strong right arm, not because we're impressive or awesome or good, but because he is. Not that we loved God, but that God loved us. And that while we were yet sinners, Christ, what? Died for our sins. Why? Because we're the children of Jacob and Joseph. Sons and daughters of God, members of a company whose number is as the stars, whose father is the King of Kings and Lord of Lords, master maker of all that is, one who, when it comes to you and yours, is always on the job. Now you go and tell that to your troubles.